listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Monday, May 18th. The sun is shining. I'm feeling good. I'm happy. I think there's going to be sports in the fall. Jordan! My wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, talk to me.
Dude, it's a good day. It's like 80 degrees outside, so, you know, it's summer's here.
Yeah. Right now, I'm just living it up, man. Today, I watched a few Canes highlights just for fun. I played a little NCAA. I walked my dog. I didn't really do anything, and it was incredible.
Yeah. Well, I was on the road for work, but, you know, I took like three cans of cold Mountain Dew Zero with me. Just driving along the interstate, you know, drinking some cold beverage, listening to good tunes. That's all I need.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, big show tonight, and I've been excited about this for a long time now, for the past few weeks. Got two of my favorite people coming on the show. Both are Heat fans. Both are big Canes fans. So let's bring on our first guest. What do you say?
Yep. I'll patch him in right now.
Hello.
What's going on, Joe?
What's up, Marsh? How are you, man?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. So our first guest tonight is Joseph. How do you pronounce your last name?
Bagaristan.
Okay, cool. So Joseph is a I'm gonna call you Joe if that's okay.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Good deal. So Joe is a writer and content producer for the Miami Heat, also a big Canes fan. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, man.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's dive right into it. Okay. I'm assuming you grew up in South Florida. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yep. I was born in Miami, grew up in Broward County because of Hurricane Andrew that came here in 92. So we moved up a little north. But yeah, so I've grown up. South Florida is everything. It's all I know. And I guess we'll get into that. I went to the U for school. But, yeah, I went to school there from 09 to 13.
Okay. I didn't know you went there, too. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. So, lifelong Canes fan, I'm assuming?
Yeah, for sure.
Good deal. So, I have a few questions here for you about the Canes. The first one I want to ask is something that Jordan and I were talking about before the show. And I want to get your opinion on this because – I clash with Canes fans sometimes, well, a lot of the times, because they think I'm a little too much of a realist, and sometimes I'm a little negative on this team. Do you think that the team's success they've had in the past, do you think that is playing a part in hindering this program to succeed in 2020?
It's a loaded question, because I just think that – I'll put it this way. It's too hard. I feel like it's not fair to the current teams to compare them to, let's say, those 80s teams, early 90s teams as well. Not so like, because the landscape of college football was so different back then. And I feel like now not only have they like grown to prominence, but they've also kind of caught up to kind of like the recruiting and just everything. It's just like teams like, you know, Alabama, which were kind of down during those times, and just other traditional powerhouses kind of got back, you know, and recruiting has changed in a way. So I think it's unfair. The landscape of college football is just very different. So in a way, I guess you could say it is hindering it, but I think it's mainly because it's kind of just not fair to, it's like, you know, to compare for those teams.
This is Jordan here, but it's nice to meet you, Joe.
Likewise.
Yeah, so I want to piggyback off what you're saying, and I agree with both points. I agree that the landscape of college football is different, and so it's really hard to compare. But one thing I do want to point to is you know, so just purely speaking recent Miami football history.
Okay.
There was something that happened last offseason with Manny Diaz right when he, you know, became the coach, and then it went into the season that is like the perfect microcosm. It was the most Miami thing you know, that I can think of in relation to recent program history. And that was how flashy he was in the offseason. You know, he's having the wrestling practice thing. He's showing up on the boat. He's crashing – or on the yacht. He's crashing the Florida State coaching parties. Mm-hmm. And then there was no substance. It was a 6-7 season, you know, where our starting quarterback – I mean, it was just an absolute mess. He ended up transferring after the season. You know, we just had locker room problems. There's – you know, drug problems in the quarterback room. It was just a complete mess. And honestly, that's a microcosm of what we've been seeing since the Larry Coker era. You know, where it's kids come in and they're all style and no substance. And so in that way, I do think our program's history is negatively affecting, you know, the current team, just because I think it's easy to see the style that was present with those 80s and 90s and early 2000s teams. You know, the unsportsmanlike conduct penalties for dancing and gloating and taunting.
Right.
You know, all the celebrations and stuff. But you don't see the work that was put in after. I mean, the only reason we know about that is because Michael Irvin tells us about it. Or, you know. So in that way, I do think it's kind of hurt us, because, you know, I think these kids just expect that when you're at Miami, like, that will, you know, the on the field stuff will take care of itself, and it really hasn't.
Right. I do see what you mean now in that regard. I think the funny thing is, back in those, you know, back in the 80s and stuff, they were doing all those taunting penalties because they were up by like 20 something, 30 something, and they could have, like, what's a 15 yard penalty? Like, who cares, you know? Whereas now it's like, you know, games are, you know, for the most part, you know, unless you're playing like Central Michigan or something, or even those aren't even given anymore. But, you know, but yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, I do see what you're saying. Like, a lot of the kind of like the other stuff is glorified, and they don't know. I mean, I do feel like I've seen a lot of videos that the school puts out. They put out a lot of stuff about like the hard work and the stuff that they do behind the scenes. But in terms of the first thing people think of, they're going to think of the flashiness. You know, like, just them just, like, just running over teams like it's nothing, almost like, hey, we're going to do it anyway. So I do see what you mean in terms of that, for sure.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Jordan, and they don't – I mean, we have to hear it from a guy like Michael Irvin or something like that to actually know what went into, you know, the work that went into the plays that made those celebrations. So I really like that. Okay, so, Joe, my next question is – over the, you know, the past 15 years where we've been mediocre, I mean, there's no way of, you know, changing that up. We've been very mediocre the past 15 years. Is there a particular season or even game since you've been a Canes fan or in the last 15 years, not counting last year,
that
was harder to get over than most, or that has just stung for a long time?
So, okay, so you're not talking – so not last year, because that FIU game really got me mad. But
there's about four or five games last year.
That's true. Let me see. I mean, actually, I'm actually going through it real quick right now. But, I mean, I could just tell you, like, even – I forgot who we played, but hold up. Last year, it was Brevin Jordan. He was short of was it Virginia Tech? Refresh my memory. He was just short of a first down touchdown. I was listening to that game on the radio. It was just last year. That game was – I was like punching the steering wheel. But, yeah, I can't really – there was one against Duke. I actually went to this game. Okay, I remember this really stands out now. I think it was 20 – it had to have been 2015 maybe. And we were up at Duke. And Duke won. It was
2013. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's probably it. And I remember being – because I have some family in Carolina. We made a big thing to go to the game. And it was just like – I was like, what the heck? I remember saying too, they deserved to win that game. They played – you know, they outplayed us. I just remember being so disappointed though. I mean, I didn't travel just for the game. Granted, I traveled to see family. But – that game, I was excited for it, and yeah, that one I remember it really stung. Again, there's probably more, that I just can't think of right now, because honestly, there is a decent amount. I mean, even if you go back, even so, 09 was my freshman year that we had a good. I mean, that FSU game I'll never forget. The Liberty game, I'll never forget that game. It was incredible. just some Ja'Cory talk. That's what started his. That year, that article you wrote, his that 4-5 game run was incredible. Oklahoma, I remember being, that was the most packed game I'd been to as a student in my 4 years there. That game was, even including FSU games, even including, we played Ohio State, I believe, a couple years after that. But that game was the craziest, for sure, just because everything was, the place was rocking, and that was, there was so much hype behind that team, and we won. Sam Bradford was out. I remember it was Landry Jones, I believe. Mm-hmm. Start. Yeah, that game was incredible. But yeah, that was a tangent. But yeah, so I'd have to say that Duke game, just because that one just really stung, because I was there. I remember disappointing. I remember seeing Duke. They're playing, fireworks going off, acting like they, they kind of like, anytime you beat Miami, like Miami's always the game that they really want to win. Not just they, but like, because we are who we are. So it's always a big time when they beat us. But That one stung to me for sure. I'm sure I'll think of more as we go on.
I got a question for you about your time in school.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious to know if there was a different vibe around the football team. You being on campus, was there a different vibe around the football team from when Randy Shannon and Al Golden were coaches? Explain what the sentiments be around the student body and just, they're on campus.
I'll never forget when Golden got there. His press conference was a huge thing, and I just remember a lot of the stuff that he was. That press conference was excellent. It kind of rallied everybody around him and the team, mainly just because he talked a good game. I guess is the way I could put it. I mean, he had his flaws, like D'Onofrio was probably the main problem, sure. And maybe the scheme wasn't really the read and react scheme probably wasn't the best to go with. But I just remember him coming on. It was just like a breath of fresh air kind of feel around the team, or sorry, around the campus. But then that slowly, rapidly changed as the years went on. It was just like, what is, and I remember some of the offensive coordinators we've had too have been just like, you think that they're going to be really good. Like I remember Jed Fish, guys like that, and guys that had success other places. And they ended up just not being the best. And James Coley, another one. Yeah. No, it just ended up not being like, it's just like it had so much promise and it had success. You're like, okay, cool. Maybe, offense would be a little bit better or a little more innovative or something. And it ends up being almost the same thing. The wide receiver bubble screens. Love them. Gotta love them.
Oh my God.
Good Lord. Yeah. Don't get me started on those. Me and my college buddies, man, we'd watch the game. We'd almost predict the exact moment when it would happen and the exact moment when we'll get a 7-yard loss. Cause you just see it coming from a mile away.
When Malik Rozier was quarterback, I the guarantee a bubble screen or all verticals. That mm-hmm. was, and it okay, let's not even get into that.
Yeah.
I get angry. But I do want to talk about Ja'Cory Harris, because that's been ever since I published that article, he's been a hot topic to discuss. And so where do you stand on Ja'Cory Harris? Were you a big fan? Because, I have my opinions. Jordan has his opinions on Ja'Cory Harris. When you think of Ja'Cory Harris, what do you think of? What stands out? And is he a Miami legend?
I would say he's a Miami. I've seen some people comment on your, how he's like a high Miami, like kind of like Miami area, Miami high school legend. I feel like in that regard, yes. But when I do think of him, I do think of him as like – I do think of him as clutch. I think that would be the first thing that comes to my head. Just because – and he was tough. Like just from – he dealt with – I just remember him always getting hit. I remember him just kind of toughing it out. Again, like I would say he was a good Hurricanes QB. Legendary Miami area, mm-hmm. like, in terms of that. But – I just remember him just like the FSU game. Like again, like that's kind of why I brought up that stretch I was talking about because I figured you'd get into Ja'Cory, just to kind of preface. But yeah, I mean, that stretch was some of the most exciting to me outside of, you know, the year we started off, what was it, 10-0 with Rick. Outside of that was the my favorite like Hurricanes, you know, memories in the last 15 years. One of my favorites was that stretch of five games there outside of, again, when we destroyed Notre Dame, which was great. That you know, recently, a couple years back.
Okay, Jordan, do you want to add anything on your boy Ja'Cory?
I don't really have a lot of great Ja'Cory memories besides the, you know, the FSU game and that stretch right there. The main thing that I remember is that I was so excited when Stephen Morris started getting playing time. And then, you know, when Harris graduated and he was gone, like, I don't mean any disrespect to the guy because, you know, I was young and emotional and whatever. And like, I, you know, I wish him the best. But, dude, he's just an interception machine. Like, if you go after 1980, so 1980 to the present.
Okay.
He has 17 more interceptions than the next highest number of our quarterbacks. You know, he had 48. Kyle Wright had 31.
Oh, my God, Kyle Wright.
Everyone knows on Twitter, because that's when I was still living in South Florida during his
run
at Miami. I hate him. I hate him. Like, he ruined my childhood as a Canes fan. Yeah. But yeah, keep going.
Granted, so to be fair to Ja'Cory, he did take a lot more passing attempts than guys like Kyle Wright and Stephen Morris, who would be next on the list for like modern Canes QBs. Mm-hmm. So Kyle Wright is actually sixth on the all-time list, but 2 through 5 is all guys that played in the 60s and 70s. So I'm not really going to count them because that was, I mean, you got like Kerry Baker, who had 8 touchdowns and 34 interceptions in his career. He was on that list.
My lord.
Yeah. So the only two quarterbacks that have taken a comparable amount of passing attempts as Ja'Cory Harris are Brad Kaya and Ken Dorsey. And their ratios, I'll give them real quick. Ken Dorsey had 86 touchdowns, 28 interceptions. Brad Kaya had 69 touchdowns and 24 interceptions. Ja'Cory Harris had 70 touchdowns and 48 interceptions. Mm. So, you know, he threw one more touchdown than Kaya, but then threw double the amount of interceptions.
Right.
In roughly the same amount of passing attempts. I don't know. I think it's a little overblown. You know, and I don't really get it. I know he was like legendary at Northwestern and that's mm-hmm. I respect that. But I do think his Miami career gets way more hype than it really deserves. I mean, to me, he was the third best quarterback of this century. Or wait, no, because Ja'Cory. Wait, hold on. So I'd probably go Dorsey, Brock Berlin, Stephen Morris, and Brad Kaya all better than him since 2000. So I don't know. I don't really get the hype, but
I can actually agree with that list. I do feel like Brad Kaya gets a kind of like I feel like he was better than people give him credit for.
Hell yeah. Yes, he was.
From a lot of stuff I've read or seen, he was a. Oh, I remember we played Nebraska one year. It was in Nebraska. I think we lost.
Yeah, we lost.
That QB, he killed us. Anyways, yeah, he had a great game. I think it was either his first or second year or something. I remember telling everyone, like, man, like, this guy, he's got it. Because he was he was hanging in the pocket, and he was so composed. I remember from that game. And, again, like, people, like, always would criticize him for not being able to move well in the pocket. But, I mean, the guy was accurate. He can throw. I mean, when he needed to, he can evade the pressure, you know. So, Yeah. I feel like the kind of the hate towards him, not hate, but I guess the criticism towards him, again, this kind of goes back to our original thing, right? Like, comparing it to the, you know, if you can compare anyone to Ken Dorsey, you can't compare anyone to Toretta, all those guys, they're going to get looked, it's just, to me, it's just, that's why I start off with just unfair to to compare in some regards. Again, you have to uphold that you and your helmet. I get all that. Like, I'm completely for, like, I get that. But just constantly comparing to legends is, especially when they're early, especially when they start off early. I mean, now you can because he played a whole career, but you get what I'm saying, right? So
I think there's a really decent argument that Brad Kaya is like a top five, if not top seven, quarterback in program history. Considering that we have five national championships and two Heisman winners, that's pretty incredible. And put out Jim Kelly and Vinny, and then Gino, Ken Dorsey. So I mean, considering that he would be one of the only guys on that list without a national championship here, I definitely think he belongs in that top echelon. I'm a huge Brad Kaya fan, and we love him on the pod. So
awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
No, you go ahead, Marsh.
Okay. So last week, they were re-showing all these classic Miami FSU games, and I love the Miami FSU rivalry. I grew up with it. I've lived in Tallahassee. Like, I know this rivalry inside and out. Where, in your opinion, where does that rivalry rank for you in terms of the best college football rivalries? And then personally, I mean, you grew up in South Florida, you went to the U. What does that rivalry mean to you, Joe?
All right. So I feel it's a top five rivalry in college football. And I do feel like – I think, Marsh, I think you might have mentioned this on your Twitter, but I think you did. But I completely agree that college football is so much better when Miami and FSU are at least relevant, even in the top 15. I won't go – I mean, it would be great if they're both in the top 10, but I feel like if they're in the top 15, top 20, college football as a whole is better, more fun. But yeah, I'm biased, so yeah, of course, top five to me. Fun fact, I feel like the Miami UF rivalry is like, I look at FSU as kind of like brother, you know? It's like the one that annoys the heck out of you, and like you kind of respect them, because I'm gonna get on a tangent again, but hey, so. Yeah. You know, so, for example, back when we were, Big East, FSU was in the ACC, and, UF, obviously, SEC. Bobby Bowden didn't have to keep us on the schedule, but he kept it on there for tradition because he understood, like, how much tradition means, and we always played them. Even though it was never – obviously, it wasn't a guaranteed win for them. It was always a great game for them, for his team, for both teams, for the state, for the nation. And we played them throughout. UF – it seems like they only play us when it's, sanction. Okay, you guys have a bunch of sanctions. You have, like, a bunch of freshmen. Okay, we'll play you now because we got Tebow or whatever. Or, like, they almost, like, set it up to that. I mean, again, I know we beat them here in, 13? But, by the way, the last game we played against UF last year, I was in Spain and I found a stream. It was, like, I don't know what time was it, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning or something crazy. I still watched part of it. I watched it on delay, I think. I just so heartbroken, but I mean that game, because I didn't know what happened. I was like, I was watching the ACC highlights. I watched the first half live. The second half I watched on like the condensed game thing. And I'm like, you know when you watch highlights and you don't know what's happening, you're trying to figure out based on the highlight where they're gonna go with it. And I'm like, okay, we won. Okay, we didn't. So it was a little bit of a unique experience because I've never really I always watch games live or I have Twitter going like crazy.
Yeah,
I was in Spain, so I didn't have that luxury, and I also kind of blocked it because I wanted to kind of try an experience, not get spoiled. But anyways, that's how my feeling on FSU, my feeling on the rivalry. It's definitely a top five, and for me growing up here, it just means so much. Again, it goes back to tradition, right? Like so many great games between the two, even the ones they win. I mean, I'll never forget. I was here. I went to the game in 08, I think, when was it Chris Ricks? Wait, someone ran. Ponder. My bad. It was Ponder. Mm-hmm. It was rain. It was puddles everywhere. It took forever to get to the stadium, but I remember he ran all over us. We were down at least a couple of touchdowns, at least a couple, and we came back and almost won in the end. It's just like the excitement. Those games, they always both teams always get up for each other. One of my favorite games. It's no one cares about it. No one knows about it. I mean, they probably do. But the 07 game against them in Tallahassee. We were bad that year, and that game, that was one of my favorite. I think we won at the end. Well, on a game-winning touchdown in Tallahassee. It's just like, no matter what, even when both teams are bad, both teams were terrible that year, it always brings out the best in both, and it's just, that's just it. Like, you always circle that game regardless. No, no, if down year, not a down year, if one team's really bad, one team's really good, it doesn't matter. You're going to get, more often than not, you're going to get a great game. I was also, real quick, I was also at the game in Tallahassee in, I don't know what year, but Stacy Coley had a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. I thought the game was over. And then Dalvin Cook ran like a 60-70 yarder to win the game for them. That was
2015. That's when I was actually living in Tallahassee. I was like, I lived a block away from the stadium. That was wonderful.
Did you go to the – you had to have went to the game, right?
No. So, I mean, I was in Tallahassee because I was on a church mission. So I watch football during that time. But, I mean, everyone the next day in church just told me that Dalvin Cook basically murdered by himself the Canes.
Yeah, that was – yeah. But, yeah, that was – again, it just means so much, that rivalry, to answer your question. It's – yeah.
Yeah, I like your point about having more respect for FSU than UF, though. You know, I personally have a lot of respect for Bobby Bowden, whereas a guy like Steve Spurrier, I have zero. You know, and Urban Meyer, I have zero. So I thought that was a great comparison by you. Yeah, man. I mean, we kind of need FSU, but UF can kick rocks, man. I kind of hope that they don't even open up football ever again from this coronavirus.
I mean, be careful what you wish for, because that means every team. So, yeah. I mean, like I work in basketball, but football is again, you probably can tell from some of my years and not like remembering exactly everything. Like since I got my job with the Heat, it's been hard to. Like, it's hard to watch every game or like I'm watching bits and pieces or radio here, online here, you know, but football is my favorite sport, clearing away. Again, kind of being from South Florida and living here is probably a big reason. Like we can have the same discussion now with the Hurricanes, you know, mediocrity now, you could do the same thing with the Dolphins. Literally, it's not almost the same, but it's very similar. So, but yeah, like the Dolphins are like my heart. Like if the Dolphins won a Super Bowl, I honestly would not know what I would do. Like, period. Like, if I honestly picked from a Dolphins Super Bowl and a Canes National Championship, just because I've seen a Canes one in my lifetime, you know, in 2001 with the greatest team of all time. ESPN put out an article, by the way, that was it Bleacher Report? One of the two put out us number one. Anyways, I've known that for, you know, we all know that. All three of us know that. And I hate those polls or stuff that come out where it's like we're like 5 or 6 or 7. It's like, no. But where was I going with that? I don't know. But I was just saying just Canes and Dolphins are, you know, if Dolphins win the Super Bowl, I would want that over a national championship for Hurricanes because I have no idea what that feels like whatsoever. But my memories are Ricky Williams and that's, you know, him just going, being great, Jason Taylor being great. And then we just, it's been bad since like 05 or 06. So, yeah.
I mean, the Cleo Lemon years were not kind.
True. Okay. You want to hear something funny? That team, the team that only won one game, my uncle has season tickets. I went to, he used to bring me to a bunch of, well, he brings me to one a year. But anyways, that year I happened to go to a bunch because no one else wanted to go with him. Anyways, I went to every single home game or most home games and I either watched one. The day we beat the Ravens, I was actually working. And I couldn't go or watch. I couldn't do anything. And everyone's like, you know, why would you watch? Whatever. I'm like, okay, fine. I got to work. Duh. And that's the game we won. I was like, wait, what? They won? And then, of course, I went to, like, I think we played the Bengals after that.
Yep.
And we got, yeah. And, yeah.
I was there.
Yeah, and we didn't win. We didn't win again. For the rest of the season, obviously. So.
Yeah.
It's just funny how those things work out sometimes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe, thank you so much for coming on, man. Love having you.
Of course, man. Thank you. I'm sorry I don't know, you know, again, like what I was saying, like some of the dates, a lot of things blend together just because, again, you know, I just apologize if, you know, wasn't quite on with every little.
No, don't worry about it. You're good, man. And, you know, I know you and I interact with each other a lot on Twitter. We'd love to have you on the show again, man.
For sure.
And you and your fam, stay safe during these crazy times.
Same to you and Jordan. I hope you guys are all doing well and families are safe and healthy. And hopefully, you know, just got to get through this. So hopefully.
Absolutely, yep. Brother. All right. We'll be in touch, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Go Canes.
Go Canes, brother.
Go Canes. All right. Cool, man.
He's a cool guy. Definitely someone I wanna link up with when I get down to South Florida.
Yeah, hopefully we're able to talk basketball at some point with him. So that would be a lot of fun. But
we are about to talk basketball with our next guest. Is he ready?
Yes, he is.
Good deal.
Hello.
Yo, Austin, what's going on, brother?
What's good? How you guys doing?
Pretty good. So our second guest today is Austin Bullock, aka Austin Buckets. He's a legend on Twitter and honestly, my favorite person when it comes to Heat Twitter and things like that. So thank you so much for coming on. Stop.
You're making me blush.
Hey man, I love your Heat takes, and so we wanted to talk a little Canes and Heat, if that's all right. Sound good?
Of course. Cool. My two first loves.
So I'm assuming you grew up in South Florida, is that correct?
Yep, born and raised in the county of Dade.
Okay, good deal. So always, I mean, I'm assuming this is correct, but lifelong Canes and Heat fan, right?
Yep.
Good deal. So yeah, I grew up in South Florida. Jordan's been here in Utah, but he knows basketball probably better than I do. I wanted to ask you a question.
Oh, can I stop you right quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did he watch The Last Dance last night?
No, I did not.
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it.
I've been protesting The Last Dance.
I heard the last episode was great, though.
I think it's just a giant circle jerk for MJ stans.
The last two episodes were perfect for jazz fans.
The last thing that Michael Jordan and his fan base needs is people fluffing him on national TV. So I'm good.
No, I like that because too many of those Brown fans are starting to disrespect him. So like everyone needs to like relive his greatness.
good deal. Okay, so I asked you about a little bit ago. I wanted to count down your top five worst losses as a Heat fan. I have my top five, but I want you to go first and let's go through some painful times together.
Oh, number one, 2011 Game 6. NBA Finals. Oh my gosh. Like, I promise I was like, 12, 13 at the time. I had a big poster, the Big Three poster. I ripped it up. I was crying. Like, damn, I can't believe they lost. I really thought we was going 82-0 that year.
Okay, what are some of the other ones? Yeah, that's on my list. Don't worry. That's on mine too.
Probably the 2016 playoffs, Game 7 against the Toronto Raptors, when Wade was by himself and Kyle Lowry got like 80 free throw attempts.
Yeah, that didn't make my list. I know that was probably painful. Okay, so here's my top five. I have individual losses from playoff series, things like that as well. So for me, number one is the Game 7 against the Pistons in 2005, Eastern Conference Finals. It was the first year that Shaq got there, and we lost at home, and I was literally – that's still to this day the worst loss I've ever had as a sports fan. That was crushing. And then number two is Game 6 against the Mavericks. That was hell on earth. I didn't think that I would ever be able to live that down with people here in Utah, but I hate J.J. Barea to this day. number three is – game two of that series when we blew a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter at home. Because I think, I mean, if we win that game, I think we sweep Dallas or win in five games. Number three, and I know you'll remember this one, we ended up winning the series, but number three is game five against the Celtics in the finals when Paul Pierce hit that contested three to go up by like three with a few seconds left, and then we won in game six. But do you remember that game five?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I can't believe we was gonna lose to Paul Pierce. Like, I thought the series was over. Bulls going back to Boston too. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Those two, yeah, that was horrible. And then the rest are combined games 3 and 4 against the Spurs. The second time we played them in the finals, we won game 2 in San Antonio. We were coming back to Miami. It was tied at 1, and we got destroyed at home in games 3 and 4. And so, yeah, it, I mean, for at least we still have that 2006 finals and 2012 and 2013. Those were like the greatest times of my life. So another question I have is, I mean, you're a knowledgeable Heat fan. I mean, you know how to talk basketball, things like that. Is there one thing that, you know, you're on Twitter and Heat fans, like, is there one thing that Heat fans say or an opinion that they have that's always kind of driven you crazy and it's just wrong about the Heat?
Oh, you already know. When everyone says Tyler Hero is untouchable.
Okay, go into that a little bit. Go into that.
You mean like a trading scenario? You mean when they say that, like, they won't trade him?
Yeah, they won't trade him. Like, they wouldn't trade him for Bradley Beal. They wouldn't trade him for Donovan Mitchell. I know you're probably a Utah fan, and that's probably not going to happen, but
yeah.
They wouldn't trade him for Donovan Mitchell, Bradley Beal, and so on and so on. I'm like, come on, the dude is only 20 years old. He hasn't proved that much. It's not like he's a rookie sensation like Luka Doncic or Trae Young or something like that. So yeah. I'd rather, like, trade him for, like, a proven superstar.
No,
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I get you with that. You know, I am a Jazz fan, and, you know, Jazz fan base has that, you know, I mean, it might be the same as other fan bases. I feel like ours is extreme sometimes, you know, that for the longest time it was Dante Exum, and Jazz fans are like, oh, Dante Exum's untradeable. And it's like, we're in year 6, and he's played, like, 112 games for us. You know,
I feel here. They remind me of baseball fans. You know how baseball fans, they love to hoard prospects?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, Marsh, you're a Yankees fan, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, unbelievable.
I mean, dude, it's like there were more Yankees fans in South Florida when I was growing up than Marlins fans. You had to search, like.
It's probably still like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. And so. It's just like the Marlins are just so consistently like not even close to being relevant. So, I mean, when I was a kid, they did win that World Series against the Yankees. But other than that, man, it's like, I don't know. It's hard to be a Yankees fan or it's hard to be a Marlins fan.
Yeah. So I got a question for you about this year's Heat. What were your expectations going into the season? I know for me, you know, I like free agency for me is huge for the NBA. I geek out about it. I'm always running salary numbers and, you know, thinking of the best ways to compile teams and stuff. So I definitely was expecting a lot less than Heat Twitter was from the Heat. But I think you guys got a different team than what everyone was expecting. I think Jimmy Butler's been more unselfish than he ever has been in his career. You got contributions from Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson and just guys that were not expected to even be in the NBA are, you know, valuable rotation players. So I'm not even saying that my analysis was wrong in the offseason that I thought you guys were going to be mediocre. But what were you feeling like right after the Jimmy Butler trade?
Honestly, I feel like we was going to be in that second tier below, like, Boston and Milwaukee. Like, I thought we would have made it to the second round and probably got bounced
there.
But I'll be lying if I said I expected this from Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson.
Yeah. Well, and that's about what I thought is, you know, I really like Jimmy Butler, but when people are saying that, you know, he was made you guys a contender all of a sudden, I was just like slapping my, you know, face palming, just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, we're not contender yet. We're right below. That's
true. I do think you guys are one piece away. And, you know, Pat Riley, who I can't stand Pat Riley, but I have a lot
what?
Of
what?
How could you hate the Don? Like,
the Godfather.
Come on. Exactly.
If I was a Heat fan, I'd like him. You know, I respect him. He's amazing at what he does.
I'm not going to hold you. From 2016 to 2018, I hated him so much for letting D-Wade go. But I forgave him.
Yeah, and you know, like, I feel like he's one of those guys where if he's on your team, you love him, but if he's not, then you can't stand him. And so, but I definitely think he's one of the more brilliant minds in the NBA. You know, he's always pulling something out of his hat that, you know, to piss off the rest of the NBA and, you know, assembles these really solid teams from a seemingly, like, irreparable cap sheet. You know, I actually did a general manager simulator over the off season, and I had the Heat's salary cap. So I was trying to, like, make moves with these other dudes, you know, trying to fix the Heat's cap sheet, and that thing was ugly. So the fact that – and there wasn't a lot of talent. So the fact that Pat Riley pulled a second-round playoff team out of that horrible cap sheet is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'll give him his props for that. Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, dark times as a Heat fan.
Yeah, and, I mean, even the Kelly Olynyk deal isn't great. Geez, and I mean, Goran Dragic, he can still contribute, but he's overpaid at this point in his career, so it's just tough, man.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I was a part-time Bulls fan at the time.
Yeah.
Wherever Dewey went, I went.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Let me ask you one more Heat question before we move on to the Canes. Who is, like, what do you think happens next year in free agency? Like realistically, who is someone that we can realistically that you can see us getting? The Heat.
What, the summer of Giannis, or you mean like July right now?
No, next year, next summer, because 2021 is when all the big free agents are coming out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so who do you realistically see the Heat getting?
Probably Victor Oladipo, because he's been wanting to play here for since 2015. Ever since he developed that relationship with D-Wade, and his mom lives down here, all his trainers are down here, not to mention Jimmy Butler is one of his close friends. Like, I see us going after him, but we're going to go after Giannis first. Like, he's probably like plan B or plan C on our list.
Okay. I mean, sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
I was just going to say, I like you, Austin. You're, dude, you know your stuff when it comes to the NBA. I love it, man.
You make me blush. Don't make my mom see me blush.
He's the guy when it comes to Heat Twitter.
For sure. Like, I usually deal with, I guess Heat fans aren't terrible with this, but you get a lot of Lakers fans out here that.
Oh my gosh.
Question like that. You just
the worst thing to ever happen is LeBron fans and Lakers fans joining forces.
See, that I could agree with. I'm a LeBron guy, but I could agree with that. Dude, Lakers fans are okay, I have Lakers friends out there. No disrespect if we're tight, okay? But Lakers fans are the worst fans in sports, man. They are so stupid, and they think that you can just materialize championship teams out of thin air. And, you know, they're the type of people that they're like, oh, we'll trade you Jason Hart for Donovan Mitchell straight up. You know, Hart has a lot of
potential. The other day I saw Kyle Kuzma for a Devin Booker trade. I'm like, why on earth would the Suns do that?
Exactly, dude. The Lakers are the most entitled fans in the world. They just, oh, my gosh. They think that every single trade is the rights to Marc Gasol for Pau Gasol. They're just so stupid, man. I mean, but anyway.
I love it, man.
Yeah, Victor Oladipo is a great choice. I, going over the list right now, I'd agree with you.
I thought for a second, I mean, Austin, you hyped me up a little bit too much. I thought for a second that we could be getting Donovan Mitchell. I could literally see that happening. I love Donovan.
Mitchell's going to be a restricted free agent, though. I'm pretty sure the Jazz will control him for at least another 6 years.
Yeah, unless he pulls up Porzingis and, like, demands, like, a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
So he can opt out the following year.
He could do that. But then I do think the Jazz would most likely trade him and probably get a decent haul for him.
Yeah, probably. But I'm not – I promise you. Like, I swear to God, like, a couple months ago, a Heat reporter, he randomly DM'd me. He's like, you wouldn't guess who the Heat hold in high regard. I'm like, Giannis? He's like, no. I'm like, Bradley Beal? He's like, no. Think more wild. He said Donovan Mitchell. I'm like, huh?
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens. I know him and Rudy have kind of had this rift. But I can tell you from a business standpoint, I know the Jazz cap sheet like the back of my hand. The Jazz will... Unless Donovan Mitchell makes it very clear that he does not want to play in Utah and, like, throws a fit,
Yeah.
The Jazz will choose Mitchell over Gobert.
Oh, definitely.
And that's – I think Gobert is the better player right now, but Gobert is eligible for a supermax. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Gobert, who you can't throw him the ball in crunch time, he can't get a bucket for you automatically, you just cannot pay him $45 million.
Yeah, that's insane. Not to mention it's a Premier League.
Yeah, you absolutely cannot. I mean, I 100% think that he's a better all-around player than Donovan Mitchell is right now. However, I would rather give Donovan Mitchell $45 million than I would Rudy. And that's just because I think Rudy is so limited in his ceiling by just, you know, he will never be a guy that can get you a bucket when you need it.
Yeah, but he's so great on defense, though.
He is. I love him, but I just think if you're paying a guy that much, he has to be able to win a game for you, you know, on the offensive end.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I also I hate how much crap Rudy gets online because he really is a very underappreciated player in my opinion. But yeah, I'm
by far the best rim protector in the league.
Oh yeah,
no close second.
Yeah, one of the best ever. And you know, like, much respect to the Heat. I do love watching the Heat. But for all you Heat fans that really want to compare Bam to Rudy just yet, like, get out of here. You know, Bam will be great. But Rudy is so much better right now. He really is.
Jordan, I've been agreeing with you this whole time, but I'm sorry. Bam is better.
You know, let's have this conversation in 2 years, and it might be a decent conversation. But right now, Rudy is so much better.
Okay, well, you guys are probably going to argue a little bit on this next topic because the next topic is Jacori Harris. We're going to move.
Oh, my gosh.
And let's talk about Jacori. Okay.
48, as I call him.
What? Oh, yeah, 40. Okay. So, first of all, Austin, you said that you have met Jacori Harris and everything like that. So, how did that happen? What's the guy like? We're trying to get him on the podcast. He's not very active on Twitter. That's a thing that sucks, but. Tell us the time and how you met Jacori Harris.
All right, so I was in like the sixth grade. My father and my mother were separate at the time, so like he had me every other weekend. So one day he's like, "Hey, do you want to go to this family reunion with me and my stepmother at the time? They're not together anymore, but yeah." So we went to CB Smith Park, and it was like 100 people at this family reunion. So I was playing football with the kids, and then I just see this 6'3" dude sitting at the picnic table. I'm like, "Who is that?" Like, "That's Jacori. Like, he comes here every year. He's part of the family." I'm like, "Stop lying." So, like, so I told the quarterback at the time, like, we was playing a 5-on-5 football scrimmage. I told the quarterback at the time, like, "Throw me every single pass and make sure Jacori Harris is looking." So every time I'm lining up, I'm running, make sure he's looking at me. I try to catch it. Most of the time when I catch it, he's not looking at me. So I'm like, damn. So when I'm done playing, I go up to him like, "Jacori Harris, don't you play for the Miami Hurricanes?" He's like, yeah. I'm like, "Can I get a picture?" So I got the picture and I sent it to Marsh today. So you can see I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Okay, so Jordan, I will let you take over the Jacori subject because I'm not a Jacori. I love Jacori because of those first two games. In 2009, like the Florida State and Georgia Tech game. After that, I was very iffy on him. But Jordan, I'll let you present your view on Jacori first.
Well, I mean, now I don't want to kill the mood. Now that was such a heartwarming story.
I ran out of breath just telling it.
So how about this, Austin? I'm gonna have you plead the case of Jacori Harris, okay? Because he is our school leader in interceptions.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on. In my opinion, he's not as good as Stephen Morris or Brad Kaya. But I want you to make your case for Jacori so I don't have to poop on him after you told us a great story.
All right, that game against Florida State, that's all you need. On the road.
But what about the 3 years after that?
No, it doesn't matter. As long as you beat Florida State, you're a legend in my book.
Okay, so to you, he's a confirmed Miami Hurricanes legend.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's more personal for me because, like, at the time, like, you see someone my skin color playing the most important position on your favorite team, you're going to look up to him. And at the time, Michael Vick was, like, the fastest player on Earth. So, like, I thought every black QB was fast until Jacori had to run that time against Kansas State, and then he got stopped at the 1-yard line. Yeah. Damn, this dude is slow as hell.
Yeah. That was a tough game. That game was one of my biggest freakouts of all time, honestly. Like,
oh, my uncle was trolling me the whole day. Like, you stand for this, man? This is your favorite player?
Well, I mean, it's hard because, like, so where I stand on Jacory is because, like, that 2009 game in Tallahassee, that's like, I mean, as a sports fan, that's top three, top five games ever. That was literally incredible. Just to do that in Tallahassee against Florida State and Austin, I think you bring up a really good point. Like, if you beat Florida State, like, to me, and the way that he did it,
to me, he's
a Miami legend. I mean, I think of Darrell Langham as a Miami legend because he had one catch against Florida State. But the thing about Jacory is, yeah, he beat Florida State, and then he beat Georgia Tech. And then the rest of that season and the rest of his career, I mean, there was one game, I always bring it up, it was against North Carolina, where he probably threw, like, five interceptions. And it literally broke my heart because that team could have been so much better, man. But yeah, I mean, that's where I stand with Jacory and everything. I think he's a Miami legend because of that Florida State game. But Jordan, I can see where you're coming, and I can see where other fans come as well.
Yeah, I mean, I loved him at the time. Like, I've said this a few times on the podcast, but, you know, I ripped out a picture of him on from a Sports Illustrated. And, you know, hung it on my wall for for part of the time he was there. Like, I loved him, but I got tired of the mediocrity, and I got tired of all the interceptions. And I think I put a lot of the blame from like that difficult era of Miami football. You know, that was
blame Randy Shannon.
There's more blame to go around than just Jacory Harris, but because he was throwing interceptions and, you know, that kind of stuff, I was so ready for Stephen Morris when he came around. And I'm not even the biggest Stephen Morris fan, but I just needed a breath of fresh air from that was a very painful era, the Randy Shannon years and Jacory Harris, and yeah.
Yeah, that was bad. So, Austin, so besides Jacory, who were some of your other favorite Hurricanes since you've been a fan?
Duke Johnson, no question. Like, I used to watch him in high school. I live right, like, 5 minutes away from New Orleans. I used to watch him all the time.
Cool.
Dude, like, he's the best player I've ever seen in my own two eyes. I'm not even going to joke. I'm not even lying.
I mean, talk about a Miami legend. Like, for in program history, Duke Johnson is – possibly the most underrated guy that's ever come through the school, and I think part of it was because he came through in such a challenging era, mm-hmm. you know, where we didn't have as much success as some of those other teams, but he was incredible. I mean, just electric from the day he stepped on campus to the day that he left. I'm with you, man. He's one of my all-time favorite Canes.
Yeah, definitely. And Lamar Miller.
Yeah.
You're speaking Jordan's language right now. These are his guys.
Yeah.
That's the era I grew up as a Canes fan. Like, that's when I started to love the game of football, that era.
Same, bro.
Even though it was mediocre, like, that's what was on TV at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you. And, you know, like, I mean, I was out here in Utah watching those teams. I don't really have any Miami connection that made me a Miami fan, except for I just picked them when I was young, and that was that, right?
Exactly.
But, dude, it's the adversity of that era, I think, is really what, like, made me stronger as a Miami fan. I loved – one, we had some cool players. I mean, Lamar Miller was such a home run hitter. If he got to – you know, as soon as he reached that second level of the defense, like, once he got to the linebacking core, he was gone. You know, unless the safety had a good angle on him, like, he was busting a 50-yard touchdown. It happened, like, almost every game, it felt like.
And another underrated name is Tommy Streeter.
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy Streeter was great, too.
I don't really remember Streeter that much, to be honest. Like, he doesn't – like, because people bring him up, like, all the time because, I mean, like, those random Canes that I was doing, I got so many Tommy Streeter requests. I don't really remember him. Who else – I know that you were talking about random Canes earlier, Austin. Who else you got?
Probably Brandon Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Former quarterback. Like, yeah, when you're a kid, like, the number one, like, everyone wants to be the number one. Like, all in the stores, you see number one jerseys. And when you play NCAA 14,
you see Brandon Harris as the best player in the roster. So, like, he's one of my favorite players.
Yeah, what was his little brother's name that went to Florida?
Honestly forgot.
He was a quarterback prospect that we missed out on, and I remember everyone was
pissed. Treon, I think.
Yeah, Treon Harris. Yeah. Yeah, because you know, Brandon played here, and his dad Tim is like he coached at Booker T, I believe. Booker T Washington and then he was on our staff for a little bit too. So I know everyone was pretty frustrated when Treon Harris didn't come here, but
I was frustrated when my cousin didn't sign here.
Who's your cousin?
You know Vashawn Joseph? He went to UF.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't he sign here?
Yeah. Come on.
We all know how dirty the NCAA is. The bag talks.
Yeah, man.
That's a whole nother story, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Not going to get too deep into that, but yeah.
Well,
Randy Shannon's a great recruiter. He's the one that recruited him.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of my buddies in college up at Utah State he was on the same high school basketball team as Jacoby Brissett. And I can't remember what high school they went to, but he said it was out in the muck, I believe. I'm not super familiar with South Florida, but he just said that Florida's bag game was very strong back in the day, you know, because he was pretty tight with Jacoby. And, you know, he said it's like one day he showed up to high school with a new Dodge Charger. And, you know, everyone was like, hey,
you're just
cool.
Making me mad hearing this, bro. Like,
But Sean told me a funny story about Nick Saban when he had a visit to Alabama. He said he shook Nick Saban's hand and he gave him $500 right there. And then I'm like, what? What's going on? Like, he just randomly shook his hand. And he had $500 in his hand, just crumbled up and gave it to him.
Yeah. Jeez, man. Yeah, that's, you know, you even get that a little bit out here. I've been privy to, you know, I there's some things that I could report to NCAA. What's it called? Their compliance in regards to some of the schools here in Utah, too. So. It's I think it's everywhere, man. It's so rampant that even these non-power programs are still doing their thing in their own way, you know.
And they only come after Miami.
That's what it feels like. Oh, I don't know, man. Well, anyways, Austin, thank you so much for coming on, brother. Loved having you. Thanks for talking basketball with me, dude. We need to do it again. Have you on? And I respect your opinion when it comes to ball, man. I'll have to interact with you on Twitter more often.
Oh, definitely. You're one of my favorite followers.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks a ton, brother. And, you know, when basketball season gets heated up again or when the Canes get heated up, we'd love to have you on again, man. Sound good?
Yep, invite me back when Jacoby Harris is on.
Dude, we have to get him on. I'm trying to get him and Braxton Berrios on. Those are my two, like, I need to have them on the show.
Oh, I love Braxton.
I might have to skip the day that we have Jacoby on, man. I don't know if I can show my face with all the heat that I've thrown his way.
Oh yeah, Austin can be my co-host for that one.
Say less.
Austin, thank you so much again, and hope you and your family are staying safe during this corona stuff.
Oh, definitely. You too.
All right, brother. Have a good one, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Marsh and Jordan, y'all take care.
All right, see you, brother.
Yep. Cool, man. That was a good episode.
Yeah. I mean, both guys, I honestly, like, could have talked to them for, like, another hour or two. Like, it's been, like, and I loved talking basketball with I told you, man, he knows his stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was, you know, very, I'd very much like to have him on again as soon as we're able to talk basketball more in depth. Speaking of basketball news, I saw that the Jazz, so their vice president of player operations got hired away to New York, the Knicks today. And then also Bojan Bogdanović had season ending surgery. So combine that with, you know, everyone in my mentions over this Last Dance garbage. It's been a pretty bad few days to be a Jazz fan.
Yeah, I did see that that injury thing. It sucks, man. It sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I was more of a Jazz fan. I'm sorry. All my friends in our group message, they were going off about it. They were pissed.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I love Bojan Bogdanovic so much. He's so cool.
Bro, I remember when we went out to dinner, like, what was it, like last September, October, you were hyping me up on him.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan. I thought there was long stretches of this season where he was arguably our best player. So he did not disappoint. And, you know, I've just been just super bummed that he's getting wrist surgery and that effectively, I mean, honestly, the Jazz didn't have a title chance without some injury help. I thought we could have been competitive against the Clippers, but not the Lakers. But, you know, obviously, if Anthony Davis twists an ankle or something, that's a game changer. But yeah, that effectively ends the Jazz hopes at even the Western Conference Finals for this season. So that's a bummer.
Well, I mean, you guys got a bright future if you're able to keep both Rudy and Donovan. But yeah, huge thank you to our guest, Joe and Austin, for coming on. Love talking to those guys. Need to have them on again. And I think we'll be back on Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah, we should be.
Awesome. Good deal. Well, yeah, great episode. They just keep getting better and better. Thank you guys so much for the support. I mean, I tweeted it out the other day, but even in this pandemic sort of a thing, you guys have helped us remain one of the best football podcasts in America. So thank you guys. Thank you to our guests. So
yeah, we made our triumphant return to the Apple charts for a football podcast. So
yeah,
hyped on that, man.
Love it. Love it. Love you guys. And so we will be back on Thursday. Until then, God bless. And go Canes as always.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to love.